Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on a beautiful day here in Plainfield, September 30th, 2018. A recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin with our morning prayer.
This is an excerpt from Pulpiton Press, page 10. Divine Presence, breathe thou thy blessing on every heart in this house. Speak out, O soul. This is the newborn of spirit. This is his redeemed. This, his beloved. May the kingdom of God within you, with you always, reascending, bear you outward, upward, heavenward.
Beautiful, thank you. And then Mary Baker Eddy, in Miscellaneous Writings, we today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. There are a couple things I wanted to mention this morning before we get into the lesson. The first, I heard, not from many, but maybe a couple people were, well, maybe needed further explanation about last week's roundtable. Make sure you understand we were in no way advocating that people go to doctors or turn to the medical. We do everything to stay out of the medical as Christian Scientists, but if for some reason you find yourself there, not to feel condemned or deserted, because that would not be Christian in Christian Science. So, Florence, did you want to add anything more?
Yeah, just that, you know, Mrs. Eddy just does make it clear that those are two different premises, and I'm sure everyone here, if they've been in science any time, we see that in it's spelled out clearly in Science and Health, in the chapter about science, theology, and medicine. She says that we must abandon pharmaceutics and take up ontology, the science of real being. So our journey here is really doing all we can to know who we truly are in God, as we are all in different stages finding out. So I think what was explained last week, again, is not that we are going to mix pharmaceutics and science, absolutely not. But the desire to rely on God alone, if we find ourselves not being able to overcome something, and with prayer we are directed that way, then as Mary said, there is no condemnation. I know of one instance where I really felt like I couldn't help someone, and that was because I felt that what her desire was really to use both. She was on all these different things, including the alternative methods and so on, and then was asking for support in help in science. With that particular situation, I really, praying about it, didn't feel like her heart was in the right direction. And I couldn't, in my conscience, really, give the scientific support. I think it becomes a battle then, I feel. One thought is one way and one thought is one way. So, but otherwise, Mrs. Eddy, just makes it clear for us. And she does say also that we have to be aware that God is helping us. God will help us all.
Yes, if I make my bed in hell, thou art there. God is the one and only physician, and medica is like a band-aid or some little something like that, the temporary means. But the only real healing is in science, and I want to make that absolutely clear. And it is true, I've had more people who come perhaps and want New Age, they want to mix New Age with science, and I will not help them. I only work with a pure science. I'm just talking about if you're in some situation and then you feel you needed to for some reason, but you're not planning to stay in it, but get out of it. And that there's a big difference. Do you want to say something?
No, as Florence said, it's where your heart is. Mrs. Eddy says if the practitioner reaches the patient through divine love, the healing will take place. But reaching the patient is a two-way road. The patient needs to be reachable. If the patient is reachable and is just having a hard time and they feel like they need some kind of temporary help medically, there's no condemnation for that. We will, and a Christian person will help them out of that. But we won't. But you can't help someone who wants to linger in it. I think that's the point.
Yes,
right. Definitely.
Yes.
The point. The other I wanted to mention Gary's testimony on Wednesday. He had gone into all the ways in which God supplied everything this church has needed through the years. They just came. Whatever the need was, had publishers, organists. Today we have people who are looking after our library, who cleaned up Sunday school. Whatever the need is, God has given it to us. We haven't even gone out seeking it. We haven't had no marketing or ads really looking for anything. God has brought it to us. And then Gary made some interesting and important comments afterwards.
Well, it just struck me that this is what it means to be a spiritual organization. In other words, things happen at God's direction. They don't happen as a result of human planning or human, you know, human this, human that, or trying to control things humanly. It's surrendering everything in the organization to God. And this is what we have experienced. And I'm confident that this kind of organization is extremely rare in the history of mankind. Extremely rare. To be able to give everything, to trust everything to God, is a huge leap of faith for most people. I'm confident that the board of directors at the time that Mrs. Eddy passed could not trust God with the entire organization. That's why the human mind crept in and tried to take control. They just weren't there. They couldn't envision a truly spiritual organization. Mrs. Eddy did envision it. God gave it to her clearly. And she designed the manual. She didn't design the manual. She wrote the manual at God's direction to push us to have a purely spiritual organization. And the board just couldn't take it. They couldn't envision it. Now, that's not condemnation. It's just, you know, Mrs. Eddy had it so clearly. But we are experiencing that here, and I think it's wonderful. It's beyond wonderful. Because we're seeing things happen in our church, not because we do it, but because we have been so trained, so well taught by God and His messengers to see that it works. It works when you let everything to God. It works better than you could ever have imagined. When you trust God with every aspect of your organization, this is true of your business, this is true of your family, this is true of everything that you are part of.
What requires, something is required of you, and that is to live the best life in science that you possibly can. That is a requirement, and as is read in our lesson this week, the golden text, him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall no more, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem. So what is that requirement in the golden text?
You have to overcome.
Overcome.
Yes.
And what is it that you have to overcome?
The false sense.
Yes.
Of living in mad.
The mesmerism of the belief that there is any life other than God.
So in this overcoming, it's a spiritualization of thought, and doesn't require, in a church, that everyone is doing it. Everyone should be doing it to the very best that they can. And that, in doing that, it brings everything you need. It's called demonstration. Demonstration. This is what a demonstration is. God is looking out, and he'll bring what he needs. He knows what this church needs. He knows whom it should reach and how. We just follow him day by day the best we can. To a great extent, this is what the practice is about. The practitioner living the best, holiest, purest life possible. And in so doing, God brings people to this person, and that heals. It uplifts thought. It clarifies the mesmerism the person is under. It's never the practitioner. It's always what Mrs. Eddy says. It's the Holy Ghost within that does this work. The practitioner, to the point as she's living it and understanding it, that brings a clarity and a healing atmosphere. So it's quite wonderful, and it takes away all the sense of burden and stress and strain, which perhaps leads us to the watching point.
Watch number 344. Quote, watch lest error tie you up in the following manner. First, to make you believe that unless you are declaring truth every moment, error stands ready to pounce upon you. Second, to suggest that you have wearied yourself mentally to the point where you feel that you cannot declare another scientific thought. Error is never more than mesmeric suggestion. We barb its arrows with our own fear and belief. Otherwise, they fall harmlessly to the ground. We do not have to argue against error in order to make it nothing, since it is nothing already. We must uncover its secret action and watch lest we believe its lies and accept its suggestions as being our own thoughts. We must strive to give it no power by giving God all power. The suggestion that error may harm you, unless you are arguing against it all the time, is a form of fear that has no real power. In science, we never fight against something. We watch lest we accept the belief that something besides God exists. If you have a match in your hand, you do not fearfully and frantically call the fire department. You watch lest inadvertently you ignite it. The suggestion that you are sinking into a morass of evil, unless you are arguing truth every moment, is false. When you learn that 2 times 2 are 4, do you have to declare that fact over and over again all day long to protect yourself from the error that it is 5? End quote.
Thank you. So, I know I read Wednesday again on the bulletin board. I guess some people who have been, you know, get tricked into doing that. It's almost like, that's like saying your rosary bead over and over and over. It's not really science. You pray in the morning to get that sense of dominion, the sense of God's all power, all presence, all knowledge. You get that, and then you live with it during the day. Living with it doesn't mean chanting out statements of truth necessarily. Sometimes that helps only to allay your own fears. But if you're doing it in a fearful manner, sometimes it makes the problem seem all the more real. and you've got more to handle. Any comments on any of the above?
When Mr. Reddy says watch against a negative watch, that's an article. And that goes with what you just said.
Thank you very much. If you're not familiar with that article, you should be. That's just what this watching point is about. And that's true when you do watch, that you're not making sure you're not just, this terrible thing out there, and boom, 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 boom. And that's why we always say the 10 affirmations, the 1 negation. You start with the all power of God. You end with that. You take up the negative in between. But the predominance of it is the all power of God. And you haven't done your watch if when you think you're done, you're still full of fear and thinking it's real. And that includes mental work for yourself or someone you love or anyone, any situation. If you still think it's real, your prayers are not complete. You work until it's gone. You know it's not the truth, period.
One of the greatest blessings I've gotten from this church is being able to have that peace at the end of the watch. Especially for things I never had peace about before. I'm always grateful for that.
Thank you. And I thought Barbara, her comment on the forum, I believe it was the responsive reading. The Lord hath made bare his holy arm in the eyes of all nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. She was saying, you know, just to wrap up what goes on in the news and all this other stuff that can seem so disturbing. Wrap everybody up in that. To be knowing that everyone, all nations, everywhere will see the salvation of God. It's inevitable. Not be duped into thinking otherwise. Now, in Isaiah, it says, for behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. My testimony on Wednesday, I quoted from Mrs. Eddy, page 78 in the Red Book. Any evil in the past cannot act as present consequences nor claim those consequences of evil to be indestructible. For God knows no evil, and it has no presence. This is the truth, and this goes along with this. The former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. I can't tell you how that statement has helped me. Another statement Mrs. Evans gave me was, if it wasn't good, it never happened in divine mind. When you even begin to get a sense of any past experience that you find so horrific, if it wasn't good, what does that mean it was?
It never.
Go ahead,
error and mistake.
Yes.
Now is the only time.
Pardon me?
Now is the only time.
Right. We only live now, but it was. Linda said it was the Adam dream. Carol said it was a mistake. Now, if you had a bad dream, you wouldn't keep reliving it and going over it and over and over it and say, oh, it's terrible, and, you know, I'm sick because of it, or I'm wounded because of it, or I'm emotionally disturbed because of it. Because if you did that, you would be doing what?
Making it real.
Making it real.
Giving it all the life it has.
Giving it all the life it has.
For me, it's what I've learned is denying God.
You're right.
Yeah, speak up.
I mean, for me, it means learning here that it's denying God. I used to do that.
Millions and millions of people still do it. Unfortunately. It's amazing how easily so many people can be mesmerized.
They don't realize that. Keep saying it and saying it. Just keeps it around, and
It'll never go away. You want to keep doing that.
Yeah, and you'll see it in other shapes and forms and sizes. It'll keep coming back into your experience. Now, when I was first given, I've told this before, but when I was first given that from Mrs. Evans, it wasn't good. It never happened in the divine mind. I said, it sure did happen. I was, what are you talking about? I mean, I was indignant, and I can just hear that, people saying, are you kidding me? It happened. I was divorced. I was in an accident. I was this, I was that. Well,
they give you the date, too, when it happens.
They give you the date, the time.
Exactly. Years ago, when I worked construction, the very first year, I got laid off in the winter. And I was really upset about it, and the foreman said, well, don't take it personal. And I told him, it's hard not to take it personal because it's happening to me.
Yeah.
But this also reminds me of what was brought out before about Gilbert Carpenter saying, you know, give me more time to realize this never happened.
Yes, that's one of his watching points. Anytime you've had any kind of a healing, too, you give it time to know it never, again, it never happened in divine mind. This is correct science. It's absolute statements, and people would rebel against them. But think of it. You have a choice. You can go with, oh, it happened. It was terrible. I'm affected forever. That divorce, I'm miserable for the rest of my life. I hate that man. Or go on and on and on. Or you can say, okay, it was part of my past, seemingly. I'll know that it was like a bad dream. I'm not going to accept it as a reality now. I'm not going to make it my, what do they say? Make it my identity or
My story,
thank you. I'm not going to make it my story. I'm going to know that even through that trial, God was with me. It led me here. I've probably learned many lessons. Why not learn those lessons? Go up higher for the trial you went through. Not let
and,
it...
And be better for it.
Be better for
not
it.
Not worse.
Yeah, I think, quite frankly, what has helped me, or what I should say, shocked the mesmerism out was to think that, you know, if I accept and dwell with any of these, I am dishonoring God. I am saying He's not all. I mean, the audacity.
That's it. That's
exactly
right. That's right. And it can be, and then you get into hating God, and that's really bad.
Yeah.
And that's just what the old boy, as we call him, wants you to do. And then you're on his side. You hate God. Why did God let that happen? And rah, 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 and you won't shut it up. And that's the wrong voice in your head. And you must shut it up, or you'll have more of the same and worse. And that's not my opinion, okay? And it's not even a threat. Well, maybe it is a threat. But anyway.
It's a good threat.
Well, yes. I'm sure we've all proved it.
We have, yes. We've proved it in our own experience. So why go down that path? Why keep reliving things or thinking that they did have power? Take that statement from essays. Any evil in the past cannot act as present consequences nor claim those consequences of evil to be indestructible. For God knows no evil, and it has no present. And if you go back, as I know Luann and others of you have, realizing the presence and power of God through your time of trial, you will find that the former shall not be remembered nor come to mind. I have found when I have followed these principles, and they are principles and laws of the universe that I'm giving you, even though you might think it's ridiculous, just try it. Try it. You've tried the other, so try something different. And see, I was astounded at the things in my past that I thought would make me miserable forever. They just left. It works. I'm living proof of that. It works. And even if you still maybe remember some things, they no longer have the sting or the bitterness. You know that story, the three Hebrew men in the fiery furnace. When it was over, what did the Bible say about it? Yes. No sound. Nothing. Nothing. Now, if they had been going, rah, 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 why did this happen? Where was God? It just proves God doesn't work. Proves Christian Science doesn't work. See, this terrible thing happened to me. Rah, 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 rah. They would have been burned to a crisp. But they had such a sense of the allness of God that when they were done, not even the smell of smoke was on.
They demanded the blessing, and they got it.
Yes, they did. So, remember, please, just try this. I took it, even though at first I didn't believe it. I said, okay, well, I'll try it. I have nothing really to lose. And then when I was consistent and when those old pictures tried to come back on me and I would rebuke them with, well, if it wasn't good, it never happened to Divine Mind. I'm not going to believe it. I'm not going to think about it. Bit by bit, they faded from my experience, as did any seeming effect. A law of the universe, if you apply it, and it'll work for you as it worked for me and many others.
And you know, in Treatment for Every Day, Mrs. Eddy just says things so beautiful in there about the, you know, this, when something keeps occurring, that nothing can enter my day to crush me. To, it's number 6 in that 10 on the list. It's just beautiful. She's saying, just say no to it all the time, every time. And it will, you know, stop bothering you.
Yes. And it talks, when we're talking about this beautiful New Jerusalem, the description of it, and there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. You should have no thing enter your consciousness that defileth or worketh an abomination or maketh a lie. And when you go around with the reality of something unreal, you are, as both Shardy and Florence said, dishonoring God. You're giving reality to something you don't want to give a reality to. So you this is overcoming, this is guarding your thought. And, you know, you can use this. We have used this many times concerning our church. Nothing can enter our church that defileth, worketh abomination, or maketh a lie. Only those sent by the Father come. But certainly start with your own thought. So, I love In Science and Health, number 2. Jeremy?
The Revelator tells us of a new heaven and a new earth. Have you ever pictured this heaven and earth, inhabited by beings under the control of supreme wisdom?
Have you ever pictured it? You know, Parson said he was sorry his computer was being repaired, so he was unable to write on the forum this week. But he, a while ago, he sent me a book, and it was called Imagine Heaven. And it was by people who had passed on and had one of those experiences near
death or something, near death experience.
And then they come back. And much of what they describe sounds a lot, in many ways, like the New Jerusalem. And Luann described what she had that. Is she here? One thing that Luann has said is the beautiful colors. She's not the only one that said that, either. It's in this book. The gorgeous colors. I mean, we think we live in a beautiful, colorful universe. But Luann, you want to say anything?
Yeah, the colors are like just something that surrounds you. It's really hard to explain because there's nothing in the material world that represents the colors that are there. It's like they have a meaning for you when you see them. They represent things. So it's really hard to explain, but they're so intense and so beautiful that you find yourself just like almost like it's hard to breathe because it's like so beautiful. You're in awe of it. So they're really, really intense, and it like it takes over everything, like your whole thought process. You can't think about anything else because it's just around you. It's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. And also they speak of this incredible sense of love, overpowering sense of love and peace.
And light.
Yes, I was just going to say, and Florence, what did you write about light?
Oh, let's see. It's almost like those colors, like if they represent love in a color, you feel the color as love. So it's hard to explain, and it's just surrounding.
Thank you, Louise.
I like what it says on page 577. The city of our God has no need of sun or satellite, for love is the light of it, and divine mind is its own interpreter. All who are saved must walk in this light. It just struck me. I found it very inspiring, heartwarming. And thinking of what love includes, I was thinking of what Drummond says, that kindness, patience, generosity, humility, sincerity, courtesy, good temper, unselfishness, guilelessness, compassion, tenderness, all that. I think surrounded by something like this, how can you walk in darkness? This is light. Light, the love, the light of love that inspires, illumines, designates, and leads our way. I just feel that, living like this, we stay in the light. How would you want to go back to any form of darkness at all, which is fear, suffering, no need?
Thank you. That's just beautiful. That sense of light, it, again, Luann said with the colors, you can't even describe it because it's so
spiritual.
Yes, and beyond what we seem to know here, although not impossible, because if John did it, that means we can do it. And it's also, she makes it very clear that this testimony of the Holy Writ sustains the fact in science that the heavens and earth, the one human consciousness, that consciousness which God bestows, are spiritual. While to another, the unillumined mind, the vision is material. This shows unmistakably that what the human mind terms matter and spirit indicates states and stages of consciousness. Now this is why you might see something and see it so clearly because you're in that divine consciousness. But the person next to you who is the human mind goes, what? And there's no convincing him because he's in that human mind, which is at enmity toward whom?
God.
So you can pray and for the spiritualization of all mankind, that their thought will be uplifted to this. But it's hard to talk to someone who's in that state, and they will experience, what will they experience if you're in the human mind?
Everything they're afraid of.
Thank you. Absolutely. Everything they're afraid of.
And these are Christians, too, some of my friends.
So-called.
Yes.
So, and that's why the importance of what you think in your mind. It's like going over negative things and watching all the negative things on the news, which they blow up every day for you. You know, you get where you think the world is a horrible place, you get in the human mind, and it taints so honey. While the divine mind sees through it. You see through the whole thing. This is all about vision. What you are seeing, what you are beholding. And I think Mrs. Eddy's description of New Jerusalem is just so beautiful. And so, Linda, did you want to say anything more about the light you wrote about it?
I wrote about the lesson was very comforting, is God with us. I just felt that
Yeah.
You can feel that throughout the lesson. The problem.
Thank you. So, and Jeremy wrote about the north, south, west.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and I knew that recently we had had the directions listed, so I listed that, and just thinking about all the ways that God provides for us to orient ourselves in relation to Him. And this morning, I actually, my initial thought waking up was that GPS only knows our relative position because it knows the absolute position of the whole earth. So we can't know where we stand unless we know God's allness. So I just, I just like that idea, and I also like knowing that I don't have to figure out how my kids or anyone else needs to find their way to God. He's already taken care of that.
That's beautiful. Again, relying on trust in God, demonstration, rather than trying to force it or create it yourself or think you're some semi-God that's going to bring all this to pass. Carol, read that last paragraph in citation 5, as the psalmist said.
As the psalmist said, beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion, on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. It is indeed a city of the spirit, fair, royal, and square. Northward, its gates open to the north star, the word, the polar magnet of revelation. Eastward, to the star seen by the wise men of the Orient, who followed it to the manger of Jesus. Southward, to the genial tropics, with the southern cross in the skies, the cross of Calvary, which binds human society into solemn union. Westward, to the grand realization of the golden shore of love, and the peaceful sea of harmony.
Just, isn't that a beautiful picture?
Yes.
And I love the story Jeremy's told about when he didn't believe in God. What was his sense of God?
Oh, yeah. I'm as time goes on, I'm more and more happy that God showed me that. I realized that the God I was taught about in my youth was kind of a jerk, and I just didn't feel that was right at all. So started calling him my North Star, figuring that he's got to be a good God, he's got to be logical, and he's got to be loving, and that really helped me to be ready for here. Very grateful for that.
And what's the name of the cottage you live in?
The North Star Cottage.
And I found that so amazing because I have been reading a book on cottages. I've told this story, and there was in Nantucket, there was property. It had two cottages that Quaker sisters lived on. One cottage where they lived, they called the Great Light. And the other cottage, they called the North Star Cottage. And I thought, wow, if I ever have a cottage, that's what I'm going to name it, the North Star Cottage. And so we had a sign. We have a cottage on our property. We've had a sign put up, and it says the North Star Cottage. And in walks Jeremy. So it just shows, again, there are no coincidences, that God governs even something as small and simple as that, God's hand.
So,
Lillian, you read the last citation in 3, starting with accompanying this.
Accompanying this scientific consciousness was another revelation, even the declaration from heaven, supreme harmony, that God, the divine principle of harmony, is ever with men, and they are his people. Thus man was no longer regarded as a miserable sinner, but as a blessed child of God.
You emphasize what Linda was saying, too, that the divine principle of harmony is what?
Ever with men.
Yes. Must never forget God is always with you. I don't care how, as I said, if you make your bed in hell, he is there. You're never deserted by the Father. He's ever at hand. And then, quoted from hymn number 206, Lil.
In the second verse, it says, O God, our Father, Mother, Truth, send forth thy light sublime, that in the pure, in its pure and cleansing rays, we may, with thought attuned to praise, behold reality.
Thank you. This is the reality of every one of you. God is no respecter of persons. There's no one favored above another. All that is required is that you have the vision to see it and know it and to worship this one God. And so many people have proved it. They've lifted themselves out of all kinds of awful situations. Prisoners of war, ghettos, war itself. There are thousands of documentations of people in the worst conditions who have lifted themselves out, not by complaining and carrying on or being miserable, but by lifting their consciousness up and out and beholding reality. The New Jerusalem, it's available to anyone, anywhere, all nations, everywhere, no one excluded, ever. Now, I have to just say one thing, because if, you know, if you think, well, if, you know, passing on will bring you to the New Jerusalem, what's wrong about that? We would all kill ourselves. That's what's wrong about it.
Well, they actually, in some of the afterlife books, it's interesting, they actually have some negative experiences where people, and I wonder now whether that's the consciousness they went in with, and they would see hell and horrible things and experience. One man, it's always stuck in my mind, he came back because in his time there, he got the message he needed to come back and help America, because America would be under attack. But one of the things he saw when he was there was a lot of people suffering with their addictions. It was very clear to him that you went with whatever you had. And he saw people arguing in like little bubbles. They were arguing with each other, but they weren't really with each other. So they like just had the argumentative state of mind, and they saw people addicted to cigarettes and alcohol suffering. So it really stuck in his mind how important it was to get this done before you went there. And I'm very grateful to be part of this church that does help us.
Thank you so much. And that was brought out in this book, Imagine Heaven, too. It's certainly what Mrs. Eddy says. What is the probation after death, everlasting punishment? This is why we emphasize overcoming. When you overcome, you experience this. If you don't overcome it and you just sit and wallow in your misery, you will continue to wallow in your misery until you overcome. So committing suicide is not an answer. I mean, you know, you're just going to end up having the same problems that you had.
And why not deal with them here now?
So here or hereafter.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, life is a school.
Yes. Yeah, we had that beautiful quote from Henry Drummond on our calendar a few days ago about that. It's not a playground, but a schoolroom. I forget the last sentence, but it was very good on that regard. And you don't skip over any of this.
One thing that's always helped me is Paul's statement in Romans, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good.
Yes. Thank you. And Mrs. Eddy is so encouraging because she says, note this, that the very message or swift-winged thought which poured forth hatred and torment brought also the experience which at last lifted the seer to behold a great city, the four equal sides of which were heaven bestowed and heaven bestowing. So, even if you are in an addiction or some miserable situation, that will be the very thing that will press you out of it so that you too can behold the New Jerusalem.
And how does that work? when you are under tremendous pressure, when you are confused as can be, you are in agony, tears are flowing, doesn't that push you to say, God, help, or I perish, or somebody I love perishes? When we give up all other reliances and finally give it all to God, when we are in the lowest of low places, usually that's kind of where it happens, isn't it?
Yeah, that surrendering comes.
Yeah. When something forces you to surrender it all to God, that is the greatest blessing in your life. And we've all been there. We've all had these horrible experiences, not some not so horrible as others, but we've all had times when we've been forced to our knees. And what we do when we are forced to our knees makes all the difference. If it turns us to God, it's the best thing that could ever happen to us.
Thank you. There are two more points, and then we're going to end. One is that the Revelator had not passed the transitional stage in human experience called death, but he already saw a new heaven and a new earth. Through what sense came this vision to St. John? Not through the material visual organs for seeing, for optics are inadequate to take in so wonderful a scene. So we know he saw it. It was through spiritual sense that he saw it. And then, the four sides of our city are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and divine science. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. This city is wholly spiritual, as its four sides indicate. Now, in John Morgan's pamphlet, Some Notes on True Vision, he ends it with the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science, and the importance of vision in seeing this. Beautiful. Gary's going to take a moment and read it. This whole session has been on how can we experience the New Jerusalem? How can we see it for ourselves? Because it is, it's available to all. Oh, go ahead.
The Word reveals my path in life, shows me the way I should go, and makes clear every footstep. Therefore, I move forward in light, trusting and confident. I cannot be befogged, uncertain or anxious, for, quote, he knows the way he taketh, and I will walk with him, unquote. Hymn 148. The Word of Revelation shows that man is spiritually minded and not materially minded. Therefore, I enjoy naturally the divine insight, reading from ideas and not from matter. So my vision is on the ever-rising scale from the literal to the inspirational. In the Word, my vision is desire to see and know truth. Quote, upon thou mine eyes, that I may behold wondrous things out of thy law. End quote. Psalm 119. The Christ is the ideal of God and discovers to human sight man in the divine image. The Christ view transfigures our human concept of man so that we behold man to be a transparency for truth, just as Jesus served as a window for God. He that hath seen me, man, rightly, hath seen the Father. See John 14, 8-10. We look out with Christ-colored glasses, but this Christ light is not abstract and static. It is dynamic and practical, for truth inevitably has an effect upon our misconceptions. Therefore, the Christ view is not only my eyes, It is also my physician and healer, remaking, restoring, and renewing. This Christ view translates the infinite to the infinitesimal, so that I see divinity manifested in the smallest details of life. Everything is illuminated and transformed by the Spirit of Truth. Christianity is the Christ viewpoint in actual use, the exercising of the mind faculties. See Science and Health, page 487, 6 to 9. What I had seen with the inner eye, I now see externalized. Quote, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. End quote. Job 42. In Christianity, I love to exercise every aspect of true vision. Yet, I also discern that I am, in fact, the exercising of them. These faculties and qualities demonstrate themselves through and as me and everyone. For my seeing is but the reflecting of truth. In Christianity, vision is in relating the inner with the outer. So I am not self-absorbed or immersed in my own affairs, but keenly aware of the interrelationship of all ideas in the one plan. And I look with interest and wonder and appreciation upon all. See Science and Health, page 516, 4-8. Christianity involves proof. Proof of the true and disproof of the untrue. Wherever I look, I am aware that divine love is in operation to heal and regenerate and save. Thus, I am never dismayed by what I see, for I am increasingly aware of the supremacy of truth. Science is the science of being. And the science attitude is living in line with this platform of perfection. My vision dwells in the unchanging facts of celestial goodness. God is of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on iniquity. See Habakkuk 1:13. Quote, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. End quote. Genesis 1:31. Quote, in this science we discover man in the image and likeness of God. We see that man has never lost his spiritual estate and his eternal harmony. End quote. Science and Health, page 548. In the science viewpoint we exclaim, I see. My thought and outlook coincides with that of principle. I see what is, or rather, I behold it. Quote, Jesus beheld in science the perfect man. End quote. Science and Health, page 476. Science is interpretation and furnishes the explanation of all things. All is clear and explained, and there is no problem of being. In my seeing, therefore, there is no strain, no intensity, no forcing to discern spiritual conclusions beyond where my being is. It is divine science that reveals and interprets to me everything I need to see and understand. My vision will indeed penetrate the deep things of God. But this is not intellectual effort. It is natural spiritual sense. Science and Health, page 258. So my vision, while ever questing, is ever at peace.
Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. So we can all experience the New Jerusalem, and we do to a greater degree. So we can follow these, what we've talked about today, and see more of it in our experience. bring it about for the world. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.